Priyavrata, Priyavrata, Uttanapado, Uttanapad, Manuputra,
sons of Manu,
Mahaojaso,
very great, powerful,
Tat,
there,
Putra,
sons.
Pautra,
grandsons,
Natrinam,
grandsons from the daughter,
Anuvritam,
following,
Tat Antaram,
in that Manu's period.
Translation proffered by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Swayambhuva Manu's two sons, Priyavrata and Uttanapad, became very powerful kings, and their sons and grandsons spread all over the three worlds during that period. Text 10.
Devahutim maratata kadamayat majam manu tasambhari shrita prayam bhavata gato garato mama.
My dear son, Swayambhuva Manu handed over his very dear daughter Devahuti to Gadama Muni. I have already spoken to you about them, and you have heard about them almost in full.
Text 11. Dakshaya Brahma Putraya Prashutim Bhagavan Manu Prayachajar Krita Sargas Trilokyam Vidato Mahan.
Swayambhuva Manu handed over his daughter Prasuti to the son of Brahma named Daksha, who was also one of the progenitors of the living entities. The descendants of Daksha are spread throughout the three worlds.
Text 12.
Yakadama Sutta Prokta Nava Brahma Shivatnaya Tasam Prasuti Prasavam Vrishyamanam Nibodhame. You have already been informed about the nine daughters of Kadama Muni who were handed over to nine different sages. I shall now describe the descendants of those nine daughters. Please hear from me. Purport. The third canto has already described how Kadama Muni begot nine daughters in Devahuti, and how all the daughters were later handed over to great sages like Marichi, Atri, and Vasistha.
Omakyana Timarandasya Kyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuminitam Yena Tasma Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovi Samstapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Kadati Swaparantiram Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangam Dekirim Yakripatam Hamvande Shri Gurundina Tarinam Vancha Kalpa Tribhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavabhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna, Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shivasadi Gaura, Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So where Canto 3 ends with a description of Lord Kapila's teachings, in this canto we begin with Maitreya Muni describing the further progeny from the daughters of Swayambhuva Manu. So we heard in great detail in the third canto about Kadama Muni and Devahuti, about their success in performing austerities, performing devotional service to the Lord, taking shelter of the Lord, and being in the intimate association of Lord Kapiladev. So here now we're going to hear more about further progeny from the daughters from the Akuti and Prasuti, and how this genealogical table of the daughters of Manu has within it so many pastimes of the Lord and so many instances where the Lord reveals his magnanimity in relation to his devotees. So as we know, and as this translation explains, I want to get the right word. We understand that there are, in the days of Lord Brahma, there are different Manus, and each Manu has a different sets of great sages and demigods, etc. Your Lord Indra's, the great sages who appear with them as well. So in this Manu, we're particularly speaking of Swayambhuva Manu and his wife Shatarupa, who had Priyavrata Maharaj and King Uttanapad, as well as Devahuti, Akuti, and Prasuti. So this is the Manu that we are speaking of. And as we are hearing in the beginning of this chapter, how the union of Devahuti and Kardama Muni produced amazing children, the nine daughters, and of course, Lord Kapiladev, who instructed on devotional service, amongst other things, and also giving a description of the Sankhya Yoga system. So the progeny that is being explained and that is being shown by the union of these specific living entities just goes to show how much thought and effort is put into producing quality offsprings, quality byproducts. So it's not that Lord Brahma was thinking, well, it's a little bit lonely in this universe. I will just spread my seeds everywhere. However, I feel like I'll just broadcast. In agriculture, there's different ways of planting seeds. You can just throw the seeds, that is called broadcasting, or you can plant them in rows or however. So in the matter of bringing living entities into this world to perform their karma, to perform sacrifice, Lord Brahma, of course, not only did he meditate and take shelter of the Supreme Lord, but also with his sons, grandsons, etc., they also followed suit from what Lord Brahma did by performing this sacrifice, becoming progenitors of the universe and populating with different species of life. So it is also an important factor for us that sometimes in preaching circles or when you speak to people, a few weeks ago, I went to a interfaith gathering organized by Bhakti Prabhu, and the topic was the environment according to my faith. So, of course, I spoke about, you know, there's so many chapters I could have pulled out, there's so many ways I could have given them an understanding of nature, but I spoke about how Krishna manifests also through nature and how it is one of his opulences, and I gave a few texts from the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna explains his nature, his wonderful nature, and they asked me a question about population. You know, there's so much population, the world cannot handle this population. Maybe we should resort to what was happening in China, one child per family. And they're like, this is right, isn't it? So as a Hare Krishna, what do you think? And I said, well, we can have 10 children if you want. You can have 8, you can have 7. It's really up to you. We're more interested with the quality of the population. So it's not so much the quantity that we are so focused about, but it's the quality. And I was mentioning that it takes one bad seed to completely create a false conception or wrong ideology of what life is, and that is enough to infiltrate into people's consciousness and to sway them away from what is most important about the human form of life. So I gave them an example. I said it is one man, whether it's you take the example of Saddam Hussein or Muammar Gaddafi or Adolf Hitler. It's one man with one idea who spread a concept that led to massive, you know, massacre of a large sum of people. So it's not so much that we're interested in annihilating population altogether, but it is the quality of the offsprings that we're concerned about. And if you look at these progenitors of the universe, if you look at whether it's your Daksha or the Lord Brahma, how he instructed his sons, or if you take the example of Kadama Muni himself, how he went and performed austerities before he came and approached his wife, of course, to produce more offsprings. So there's great sacrifice and great meditation on the Lord to produce a higher caliber of living entities to come and populate this earth. So they were quite shocked when I say it's not so much about the quantity, but it's the quality. And they still couldn't grasp the concept. They're like, just have one. Like, one is enough to completely, you know, you can give birth to a Hitler, or you can give birth to 10 people who will become Krishna conscious, right? Who, the benefit is those who understand what this human form of life is about. So some people were accepting, but some people were still dead set or no, just one per family. Like, okay, peace to you, Hare Krishna. So this is, when I was reading this section, it further impressed upon me that yes, it is the quality of association. It is the quality of the offsprings that are coming. And in English we have this proverb, I think that's what they call it, or these sayings, that one is a chip off the old block. Has anyone ever heard that one? If you're with your family, you're with your dad, you're just a chip off the old block. It means you take after one of your parents, either your mother or your father, or the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. You have similar qualities with what you associate with. So if we look at the selection of the suitable candidates for Devahuti, Akuti, and Prasuti, we can understand that Swayambhuvamani and his wife, Shatarupa, wanted to create a certain quality of population. It's not that they just went to any random person, here is my daughter, you just go and do whatever you want with them. They were specific in their selection. Even in the animal species we see this, there's natural selection. They are specific because they want to contain a certain type of breed of animal, so they will make sure that it produces offsprings with a particular breed of its kind, etc. And in that way, the potency of that breed becomes enhanced and it goes on into the future. Of course, there's a demented way of looking at it, blue eyes and blonde hair. Someone once did that, but that's not the type of selection we're talking about. The type of selection we're looking at here is raised consciousness, a consciousness that goes beyond just the body, the mind, and sensual activity. So when Swayambhuva Manu was looking for suitable candidates, of course they chose those candidates who were interested in taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and further populating the universe so that the pastimes may carry on. So if you look at the pastimes with Devahuti, Lord Kapiladev had to come to give this proper knowledge of Sankhya and also explain devotional service. If we look at the union between Prasuti and Daksha, it produced certain 16 daughters, and the youngest being Sati. And the famous pastime between Sati, who was married to Lord Shiva, of course, there's an entire Daksha Yagya pastime that happens, and so many lessons are coming from that. So in these unions themselves, they give forth opportunities for the Lord to come and enact his pastimes so we can take lessons from these pastimes and understand him as he is, understand the Lord's in truth, his tattva, and also his rasa, how the Lord relates to his parts and parcels. So that is the relations that we see here. So these 9 daughters were married to the great sages. And as I mentioned, in the 8th canto, 13th chapter, there's a description of the different Manus who appeared as the 12th Manu, the 9th, the 10th, etc. accompanied by the great sages and brahmanas, etc. So there's a wonderful description there given as well. So these nine daughters were given to the nine sages. I'll just give an example of a few. So one of the daughters, Anasuya, she was married to the sage Atri, and from that union came partial incarnations of Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu. So with Lord Vishnu, they had a son who was a partial incarnation called Dattatreya. With Lord Brahma, Soma was born, the partial incarnation, and Durvasa Muni was born, who was a partial incarnation of Lord Shiva. And the daughter Shraddha, she was married to Angira Muni, and they, among many of the living entities they gave birth to was Brihaspati. And Brihaspati, as we know, he was the spiritual master of the devatas, of the demigods. So there's a wonderful pastime later on, I can't remember if it's Canto 7 or 8, between Brihaspati and Lord Indra, where Brihaspati walks into the assembly and the devatas are enjoying, and they do not recognize that they hadn't recognized that their spiritual master had entered, and they did not pay proper respect. So there's an entire pastime that goes on, how the demigods then lose their potency, then they get invaded by the asuras, and they flee, they go incognito, and the so many lessons come from there that, you know, when we do not, one of them being, of course, that always sticks into my head is that we can have all the wealth, all the opulence and everything, but if we fail to offer respect or homage, especially to the guiding spiritual master, then we can lose all potency. We can lose all strength and we can lose our spiritual vision. So this is the great lesson. As soon as the devatas realized that their spiritual master had come into the assembly, they had failed to recognize him and he had left, then they were in... Their hearts were shattered. They had understood. They could feel that their potency and their strength is going because they had committed an offense. So this pastime went on with Brihaspati and his disciples. And of course, Hari, the daughter, Haribhu, was married to Pulastya Muni. And Pulastya gave birth to Vishnara, who was the father of Ravana, Kumbhakarna, and Vibhishan. So many... living entities took birth from these magnanimous personalities, which gave further rise to more pastimes, activities of the Lord. So it is not the ordinary, you know, production of offsprings who do not do anything or do not serve the Lord whatsoever. So all these marriages, the daughters being given to the great sages, were arranged by Swayambhuva Manu in this instance to further the population and also to make way for further pastimes with the Lord. And if we tried, not that we're trying to compare, but if we look at modern day arrangements, it is very, very different. Not only do the parents not look out for, well, at least for some of us, some of you maybe in your families, you know, mother, father, they help out. They look for a suitable candidate. And I was speaking to my mother about this the other day. I said, could you imagine you looking for a husband for me? And she was like, oh, the headache. The headache. Because it is a sacrifice. All these things that are happening and all these... daughters, it's not that they only gave birth to human beings, they gave birth to different species as well, right? Whether it was your bird life or your, you know, your reptiles, you name it, they were that powerful. So, and I said to my mother, could you imagine you having to go through all that trouble? And she said, which is, I forget sometimes because I haven't been in that part of the world for a long time, so I get a bit forgetful. And she said, you know, actually it is in the Swana culture, that the parents are the ones who look for suitable matches. That's how it happens. And I was like, you never told me this. I'm like, yes, I did. Forgetfulness, Kali Yuga. So it was natural. In most cultures, it was normal for the parents to be concerned about the furthering of the family lineage, right? That there be proper offsprings. In India these days, what do we have? Shadi.com? So we have these websites. Sometimes you look for suitable matches. Sometimes you don't necessarily have to go to it, but the parents go through all this trouble to look for a suitable match, girl or boy who has a certain disposition, who is at least vegetarian, who at least is interested, if not a devotee, already interested in spiritual life, so that their home life might prosper spiritually. So the point that Swayambhuva Manya, of course, is trying to make is that the service to the Lord continues. Lord Brahma is given the task of populating the universe, so with his children, Lord Brahma is following the service given to him by the Lord. And the daughters, the granddaughters, etc., they are continuing and helping Swayambhuva Manu further populate the universe. So it wasn't done out of sense gratification. There's a lot of family planning happening here. It is specific. We want higher caliber offsprings to populate this universe so that more pastimes of the Lord can continue, and so that the kirtan, the sankirtan, the chanting of the glories of the Lord can also continue. It wasn't only sense gratification for the individuals. So yajna has to be performed. Having offsprings or just expanding in any way is a great sacrifice. Whether you're expanding a house, whether you're expanding a business or an idea, whatever it may be, it takes great effort and sacrifice. And in this world, we all have to perform some type of sacrifice. So, in a lecture Prabhupada gave in 1975, Prabhupada is speaking about this nature of sacrifice. And I'll just read a part of it. Yajna has to be performed. This is London, March 10th, 1975. Prabhupada is giving a lecture on Bhagavad Gita, 7.2. Saha Yajna Praja Srishpa. In the Bhagavad Gita, you will find that all the living entities, especially the human beings and the demigods, the demigods were first created, the seven rishis were created later on. Imam Vishvate Yogam Proktavan, Vivashvan Manu. The sun god was created, then from him Manu came, from Manu Ikshvaku came. So in this way, the Praja's progeny was created for performing yajna. That is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. So everyone is meant for performing yajna. Yajna te karma. Everyone should work for performing yajna. This is human life. We work very hard. And Prabhupada says, you have tendency to go to work from morning to 6, to night to 10, to 11 o'clock. So the lecture transfer, it goes on and on. But the point that Prabhupada is making is that yajna has to be performed. And in this way, especially in relation to progeny, this work has to go on. We're performing sacrifice to attract great souls who come and continue spreading the glories of the Lord. So we perform this yajna. We go to work. I'm going to work at 9:30. That's a sacrifice some, most of us have to make. But that is to further support our Krishna conscious lifestyle, and so we can support the temple, support the preaching, support those who are doing the preaching as well. So from many angles, this sacrifice is required. And of course, we understand what the greatest sacrifice is. We may have different classes of person, whether it's your impersonalist or your personalist, they are all seeking to advance some way or the other. But in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains who's the topmost yogi, the topmost who is not only performing austerities and sacrifices, but also worshipping him. After Krishna explains the yoga system, Krishna explains who is topmost in these areas. Yoginam api sarvesham magatantra atmanam sharavan bhajate yomam sayukta tamomata. And of all yogis, one who has faith in me, who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself and renders transcendental loving service to me, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. That is Krishna's opinion. That is my opinion. So Krishna here is speaking that in all schools of yoga, there's this sacrifice, perform karma, perform this yajna for the devas or for the pitris or the forefathers, whatever it might be. There are many, many sacrifices that we perform. And then Krishna says later on, before that actually, Krishna has already established, but as in the sixth chapter, Krishna speaks of the yoga ladder itself, just to show whether it's karma, whether it's jnana, or whether it's ashtanga. The highest yogi is one who is always abiding in my instruction, thinking of me from within. That is the person who will achieve the highest success in yoga. And even before then, Krishna explains the greatest sages, what their mentality is. Bhaktaram yagya tapasam savaloka maheshwaram suhidam sabhabhutanam gyatva mam shantim rishati. Krishna is explaining who's the topmost sage. Because we read so much, there's this sage, there's that sage, even in different Upanishads or different books from different personalities, they speak about sages and whatnot. But Krishna here says, the sage who knows me as the ultimate purpose of all sacrifices. So we underline, of all sacrifices that we perform. And austerities. Because you have the yogis, the babas, those who go to, you know, you see them all. The biggest spiritual gathering in the world to date is explained to be Kumbh Mela. Full Kumbh Mela, where there has been recorded 70 million people come. And there have been documentaries made about the Kumbh Mela, where you see everyone from the Naga babas to all sorts of sages and saints are there, giving discourses, showing their mystical potencies, or sitting in a trance for days on end, or wearing nothing in the hot, scorching sun. Whatever, there's an array of mystics at Kumbh Mela. So that included as well. The sage who knows me as the ultimate purpose of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. One yogi might think, I'm the most austere. Look, I have not cut my nails in 10 years. And then to his left, there's another Baba who has not cut his nails for 20 years. That causes anxiety. I have to stay here for another 10 years. You're not peaceful because there's always someone around you who is better. But if someone knows that the purpose of all these sacrifices, these austerities, the control of all of these, the benefactor, the well-wisher, the person who gives us all these potencies, if we know that this person has them in full, there is no anxiety. We become peaceful. Whether we see this Baba, that one, we know these potencies have been given by the Supreme Lord, the possessor of all opulences. But later on in the 12th canto, we'll hear, I think 11 and 12, how the yogis, they attain all these mystical perfections, all these cities. They think they're getting them from Lord Shiva, but actually Lord Shiva explains that actually it is his Lord who gives them the potency. That it is not because of him, Lord Shiva. He's a servant of the Supreme Lord. And all these potencies, all these shaktis are coming from the Lord through him as a medium. So even with these powerful yogis or persons who perform austerities, these are all coming from the Lord. Srila Prabhupada mentioned that simply by understanding this verse, these facts that are given, that those who know what these purposes are, the purposes of these austerities we perform, the sacrifices that we're performing, if we know who the controller and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities are, then we'll actually become peaceful and happy. But on our own, trying to gain all the perfection is a great cause of anxiety, because we're not supremely perfect in any one thing that we do. There's only one supreme being. So having knowing this, we do not get, we're not put into great anxiety. So even with the Lord, the Lord's activities sometimes are very, very difficult to understand. So we may think of the example of, were the Daksha's sons, who he sent to the forest to perform austerity, the 10,000 sons, 1,000, 10,000 sons, is it Daksha or Daksha? Yeah, so the first set of sons, he sent 1,000 to my memory. And he thought, yes, go to the forest, go perform austerities, you will come back and continue and procreate, become powerful grihasthas, produce good sons, good population. And in that section, Prabhupada explained that Daksha, in that instant, Daksha means expert in sex life, because his service was to, he's a progenitor. Therefore, his service was to populate. But his sons went on. And of course, he's, you know, his sons want to follow the orders of the father. That is Dharma. But sons follow. If father, mother says this, it's yes. I was speaking to my brother-in-law the other day. Hopefully he's not listening. And hopefully my husband's not listening. And I was saying, so how is it happening? Have you found anyone? And he says, no, it's very difficult. Sometimes, you know, mommy doesn't like, so I don't go with it. And I was like, wow. See, so much consideration, so much trust to the parents. Where I come from, doesn't matter whether mother likes or doesn't like. You do your own thing. In most parts of the world, it is like that. Whether the father, I'm going to get married whether you like to or not. I've heard so many of my friends say, oh, my family didn't come to my wedding. They're not in agreement, but this is my life. But when I heard him say this, you know, my mother does not approve of this one, therefore I will look for someone else. I was very impressed that so much trust is given to the mother. Of course, she's a devotee mother. She's out for a specific. But nevertheless, it is the culture, right? What they see growing up and how they are taught. So this is there that, you know, Daksha was trying to instruct his sons, you go and then come back and populate. And who do they meet? The transcendental Narada Muni. And he comes in and says, listen, you know what, this whole procreation thing, don't worry yourself about it. Just see how much taste you are getting from this service. Just carry on by yourselves, your brothers. You'll give each other strength. Continue on your own. And they got so fired up, so they never went back. And Daksha was fuming. He was furious. How dare Narada Muni come and tell my sons, I'm their father, and this is for a higher service. We can see it like that, but there's, you know, with one pastime, there's so many lessons Krishna is giving. And sometimes they look contradictory. Right? Dharma says, you know, your father is someone like Daksha. He's performing his service. It is also a service for the universe. And then he is Narada Muni. He's coming and interfering. Krishna, what's going on? Not only does it happen once, it happens twice. So Daksha, he cools down a little bit, sends second set of sons. And the potency of being a progenitor, you can produce 10,000 sons. You can produce 1,000 sons. Sometimes in this world, people can't even produce one. Now, that was the potency back then. So anyway, the second set of sons come. They go to the forest. And who comes along? Narada Muni on his Veena. By singing the glories of Radhika Raman, glories of Krishna. And again, he sees his sons and he says, don't you want to follow your brothers? Just see how successful they are, what they have done. And they're thinking, yes, 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 they're doing great things, they are powerful, they're advancing. So they also follow the route of their brothers, and then Daksha loses it. Curses Narada Muni. May you never be able to stay in one place. Narada Muni had no problem. Like, that's fine. That's fine, mate. I will sing the glories of Krishna wherever I go. I don't have a home. Everywhere is my home. And that's what Narada Muni, the transcendental spaceman. Someone once wrote a song, Narada Muni, the transcendental spaceman. He's there with his Veena. He just sings the glories of Radhika Raman. So for a devotee, sometimes curse, no curse, it doesn't matter because they'll always glorify Krishna in whatever circumstance. So one might think, oh, these instructions were given. Daksha gave to his sons. His sons didn't listen. Narada Muni got interfered not once but twice. Or with the pastimes of the Lord, sometimes things are not just that black and white. There are very hidden messages there. The Lord wants to reveal certain aspects of devotional service, of surrender, of attachment to Krishna, of the superiority of devotional service. So as we read this section on the genealogical table of the daughters of Swayambhuva Manu, we'll see that within each pastime there's so many hidden messages that will come out. So many qualities we'll hear about the Daksha Yagya. So many qualities of Lord Shiva come up. So many lessons to take, how to respond when provoked, how to always take shelter of Krishna and see every result as a blessing from Krishna. Because we may, I don't know if you've ever been through this, you are following, you're hearing instructions from your spiritual master, you're reading the books, you're trying to be attentive, you're doing service, and somehow or the other, you don't get your plans as you would have liked them. Things just don't go the way you want them to go. And you're doing everything to the T. Like literally, you're Mangalari Monday to Sunday. 2 hours reading every day, Harinam. Prasad distribution, take care of devotees, you know, the six loving exchanges, Hare Krishna, giving a gift, receiving a gift, you're doing all these things, and it's, Krishna, I haven't spiked in my devotional career, what's going on? Krishna works in mysterious ways. I've given up trying to find out. I've given up asking why now, why not now? And I've seen that when Krishna acts, he acts at the perfect moment, when it is perfect for you, the individual. It might not have been perfect for me, but it would be perfect for my friend next to me. So everything that happens, whether it's, you know, Devahuti lamenting, oh, why did I bother my husband? Why did I say we should have a child now? I feel so bad. He's advanced. And Krishna blesses by giving her Lord Kapila Dev, who sat and instructed her about devotional service, about Sankhya Yoga, the philosophy. So many instructions were there. So the way Krishna acts is very, very mysterious. You don't see it coming. Sometimes we do not understand. But when we read about these Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita is filled with so many pastimes of the Lord. They're not all the same. And we see that Krishna, he tailor makes his response for each and every individual, including also the so-called inimical ones. Krishna responds to them and blesses them accordingly. So this is a wonderful section where we're going to be slowly introduced to the pastimes of other daughters, Prasuti and Akuti, and their offsprings, and the other, and further on how their offsprings related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as Srila Vishwa Chakravarti Thakur, he often quotes the verse Yasa Deve Para Bhakti Yatha Deve Tata Guru Tasya Chakrita Hiyata Prakashante Mahatmanaha. Now, only to those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of the Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. Now we perform our sacrifice, and in this Kali Yuga, the highest sacrifice that we're performing is the Sankirtan Yagya. And as we perform this sacrifice, which is pretty much our entire lifestyle is a sacrifice, we will not only experience, but we will see what Bhagavatam is talking about. We will see and understand that Krishna is everywhere acting in our lives, in this universe, in this world. And we will understand that we are eternally his servants, his parts and parcels, and we can connect with Krishna at any point so long as we qualify ourselves. Because we know the quality of pure bhakti is that it is supremely attractive. It even attracts Krishna. So that is the potency of the process that we're undertaking, that we have a process that can attract Krishna to the point where Krishna wants to come and understand what is this process that is so tasty. What is this process that makes my devotees forget to eat, forget to sleep, to run out of the house, hair disarray, one earring here, the child is crying. What is this process Krishna wants to taste? Therefore he comes to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we know that in this age, it is very, very difficult to approach Krishna without going through the agency of Panchatattva. In order for us to really approach Radha Krishna, we have to take shelter of Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, an entire Panchatattva. Only then will the real dirt from the heart and our mind be cleared off and we'll be able to chant Hare Krishna. Kirtanya Sada Hari. Will be able to eternally chant Hare Krishna, and chant Hare Krishna also means the glories of the Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I will stop there now if there's any comments or questions. Yes, Krishna. Krishna Das. Did who get a sinful reaction? The question is, after Daksha cursed Narada Muni, did he get a sinful reaction? Did he get a sinful reaction? I know at some point, but this is a different pastime, Daksha got the head of a goat, but I don't think it was for this. I can't remember, Krishna. I'll have to check and look for you. But it is coming up. We'll read about it. What happened to Daksha after he cursed Narada Muni? Of course, Narada Muni didn't see it as a curse. He just saw it as an opportunity to just be everywhere all over the universe and spread the glories of Krishna. Generally, when we hear when someone gets cursed, it's a very negative connotation. Oh, I won't be able to do something. But Narada Muni is able to do anything. He can go anywhere in the universe and chant the glories of Krishna. So it was beneficial for him. No loss.
Is Narada Muni eternally Narada Muni? Or is it like Indra,
Narada Muni, in my understanding, is Narada Muni is Narada Muni. Whereas all the other devatas, all the other devatas are posts. Like there will be, I'll show you. I wrote it down. Like the seven great sages, different devatas, they are on rotation. So sometimes, even when there's no one qualified to be a Lord Brahma, one of the Lord's partial expansions will come and will become a Lord Brahma. But my understanding is Lord Narada Muni, he's eternal. It's not a post. Because he's also in the Panchatattva. He is the combination of Gaura. Gadada Pandit. Shrivas. So we have, you know, Deva Rishis, the sages amongst the Devatas. Different classifications, but Narada Muni is Narada Muni. Special category, just like Lord Shiva. He's a special category, just like Lord Shiva. Yeah. I mean, he'll come in the form of Advaita. You have Sada Shiva. You have a combination of Shiva and mixed with Lord Shiva. And in the material world, he'll have a different combination. But Shiva, he's eternal. And he has a female form as well when he's in Goloka, when he's in Vrindavan. He has a different form. A female form of a gopi. Yeah, so Lord Shiva sometimes is explained as he guards the fort. He's guarding Vrindavan from all other influences. That's why they say sometimes it's not that just anyone can enter Vrindavan, because Vrindavan is also guarded. There are certain personalities who are guarding Vrindavan, and Lord Shiva is one of them. And he's so powerful, that's why even in the eighth canto, to come for the Lord to show his potency, Lord Shiva attracts him, right, as Mohini Murti. Lord Shiva, the Lord just doesn't do such things with anyone. And therefore also when Advaita Acharya is calling, the Lord comes. So we can see different ages, Lord Shiva in the form of in his influence, in the form of Advaita Acharya, he's calling for the Lord, he's worshipping Shalagram Shila, he calls for the Lord to descend. And similarly, in another instance. So he's powerful. How to stay motivated? I was mentioning that sometimes, you know, as hard as we try, we'll go. He was saying sometimes there's good weeks. You can go to Mangala to do everything, and then the next week, not so good, a little bit tough. So how do you stay motivated when sometimes you're doing fantastic and sometimes not so fantastic? Wonderful question. How do you stay motivated? I often say, and I often read, that it's a steady affair, in the sense that it's not going to happen overnight. And if you miss, if 1 week is good, 1 week is bad, we just keep getting up and trying. We have the rest of our lives to try. Even at work, we might, you look at yourself as a student, different grades. You might have excelled in one subject in grade 9 and then at another in grade 12. So sometimes our consciousness is affected by different things, different levels. But it doesn't mean that when we haven't perfected something, or when we're we're having difficulty doesn't mean that we give up. It just means we keep learning, we keep trying. So the motivation, I'll say just remember that it's not a race. We will get there. It's a journey. You keep yourself motivated. The one way to make sure that we're always on track is just to always keep hearing and keep associating. You have to keep hearing and associating. And also, sometimes it is genuine reasons. If you are ill and you cannot make it, don't burn the candle at both ends. One senior devotee once told me, burning the candle at both ends means you're overexerting yourself to the point where you'll crash and burn and be in a state where you won't be able to do as much as you would like devotionally. So, not too much, not too little. Krishna even says that in Bhagavad Gita. We try to strike that balance. Not that we're always comfortable, we exert ourselves for Krishna, we push forward, we sacrifice, but also a steady balance. And that takes a while to achieve. It's not just going to happen, I'm so balanced. And it's not a mechanical thing. As you perform bhakti, as you perform devotional service, the process that Srila Prabhupada gave, gradually we start getting realizations and clearer and better understanding of how we are practicing Krishna consciousness. If it's just duty bound, sometimes we become so mechanical and we do not allow for growth. We're fixed. I must do this only like this, only at this time. That's fine. We can even chant mechanically. But over time, as we practically perform devotional service, the realizations also come. And as it is mentioned, that verse that I quoted from Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, these imports of the Vedas, as we perform bhakti under the guidance of the spiritual master, they become revealed in the heart. So, but this is a gradual revelation. It is not 2 weeks' time will be self-realized, like we sometimes read on these Google ads, become self-realized in 2 weeks or in a month. It just doesn't work like that. So motivate yourself. Just see how, associate yourself with those who are trying to do as you are and get the confidence from there. And at the moment I'm reading Nectar of Instruction and it's encouraging me because it speaks about confidence in Krishna consciousness. It speaks about enthusiasm. It speaks about associating with devotees. So even just reading to remind ourselves how to slowly go on our, not slowly go on our journey, but gradually make advancement. So just associate yourself with that spiritual energy. Yes, Russell, what is it? Okay.
Playground.
senses. Okay, so pretty much increase your spiritual activity through hearing, through the process pretty much, like he says, smell an incense, have prasadam, listen to a kirtan, listen to a class, and that will take you out of a lower mode of existence. By balance, but there are circumstances where sometimes unforeseen circumstances happen in your life, and I would like to say sometimes they are beyond your control, and it puts you down a little bit. If there's like, if your body is sickly, for example, and you can't make it to a temple program, don't kill yourself over it. It's not that you woke up and thought, I'm definitely not going. It's you have to also look after Krishna's body. Because if you want to keep going for X amount of years, you also have to look after yourself. That doesn't mean that now, Swarup Shakti Manaji, you said we have to look after the body. Now, instead of going to Bhagavatam class, I'm going to go and, you know, pump some iron and do some push-ups, you know, look after my body. What I'm trying to say is we should try to make sure that we take care of our body, mind, and our intelligence. We need all of those actually to serve Krishna. We don't only serve Krishna from a mental platform or intellectual, we also use our body. But if we're not taking care of a tool that Krishna has given us, then down the line we might not even be able to use that tool properly to serve Krishna. So sometimes I know I've done it before, didn't take care of the body at all. And now I'm having certain type of difficulties because something that's just not working how they should be at this age. So taking guidance, constantly trying to give ourselves spiritual energy from hearing, from kirtan, from being in a spiritual environment, that's enough to take you out. So often I've walked in and I've had a bad day, or I wake up on the wrong side of the bed, my consciousness is down, and I'll walk in the temple room, Guru Puja, and I'll try to be very down. Sometimes the mind does that to you. It puts you down. And I'm not talking. 5 minutes later, in front of the deities, in association of devotees, it goes away. It actually goes away because the energy is just, the spiritual energy is just too high. You're immediately transported. You're taken out of that slump of just ignorance. Kirtan hits, incense, you see the smiling face of devotees, you see tilak. Your consciousness is raised. It's actually true. Like Einstein said, a problem cannot be solved by the same consciousness that created it. So the mind, we're on the mental platform, we cannot mentally deal with it. We have to raise our consciousness. And that raised consciousness will deal with the troubled mind. Yeah, last one before I get in trouble. Yes, Prabhu, thank you.
On that point, Prabhupada says anarthas. Anarthas come in between, which makes it really So if you remove the anarthas,
yeah. You
can be safe.
Unwanted things, whether it's pride or anger, whatever it might be, just like when you're a gardener, there's always some weed that pops up. It's not like you try to go buy some weeds and plant them. Just having a material body means we are afflicted by certain things. They will be there. But if we're conscious and if we're knowledgeable about what these unwanted things are, as soon as they pop up, we can uproot them. We can get rid of them and so that our bhakti creeper can grow without being choked. So we have to educate ourselves on what these unwanted things in bhakti are and make sure that when they do pop up, we recognize them and we do the needful. And then keep pushing forward because they will come. These weeds will grow. But we have to... Yeah, it's just weeds. They're unwanted. Just take them out. All right, thank you very much. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.